Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 194 of the Beyond 90 podcast. Eric Subihano here with Majella Card, Emma Burke, and Dale Roots. The world of women's football has been relatively kind to us this week. We might even have an episode that's shorter than 80 minutes. We'll have to wait and see, but I think we might have a bit of an easier time recording things this week. Firstly, I shall check in with my co-host. So I'm going from left to right on my screen. Madge, any particular thoughts, feelings, etc. from your week?
No, it's been a blur. It's been
Yeah.
a blur of not a lot of football for me, so just chilling out and very boring. Yeah, nothing of exciting to report. I'm sorry. I should have thought of
That's
something
okay.
to
We
say.
can't have too many boring weeks, but some you need them sometimes. So there's a life lesson there. Emma, how are you feeling?
Gonna lie, I'm tired. Mostly because I've started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer and it's kind of taken over my life, so I've just been like churning through those episodes. It's very, very late 90s, early 2000s. Like
Oh yes.
you can really tell.
Iconically late 90s. Yes.
And every time I want to laugh at something, I have to stop myself because I feel like it validates Joss Whedon and I don't want to do that. But it is
Yes.
also very funny, so it's like I don't like that man. It's a
Don't
really
worry,
creepy man.
you'll
I
soon to like really hate Xander.
already
Oh.
do.
Yeah, well,
And I
there you
also found out that he, Joss Whedon, actually based Xander off himself in high school. So,
What a nerd.
yeah, big time loser over there. Anyway, really enjoying
Yes.
watching Buffy. Haven't seen that much football, to be honest.
That's fine. I mean, to be fair, there wasn't that much of it.
No.
What with an international break and the Tillies, I mean, we like that they're having a bit of a break. Only one game in this window. We'll cover that later. But yeah. Well, by the way, that just reminds me. I haven't thought about Sarah Michelle Gellar in so long. I wonder what she's doing these days.
Icon.
Anyway,
She's out there being iconic, I'm sure.
yeah, still iconic. I'd play that. Dale.
She keeps popping up in like young adult type movies, and it's like, oh,
Yes.
there's Sarah Michelle.
Yeah, I
There
was gonna
she is.
say. I was just trying to think of like the last thing that I remember her being in, and it was I like she was in The Grudge, but that was in
She
like
was
2004.
actually she was in the
No,
Uma
she
Thurman
was
kids thing. Do
oh.
revenge with my
I'm st
whore.
yes, thank you. Yes,
Me showing that
and she
like
was
I
the
am a Buffy
principal.
era.
Yeah,
It
I was gonna
is. He was the
say
principal in it. Yeah. Ethan
there are
Hawke.
three people on this pod at the moment who watched Buffy while it came out.
Okay,
Probably at 7:30 or
sorry,
8:30 on Channel Ten, I
yes. I'm
imagine.
gonna be so real with you. I don't think I was actually born when Buffy started airing.
Righto.
So,
No, you're
gosh.
yeah, I believe that's true. So,
yeah,
So,
97 to
I'm so
2003.
sorry. What
Look.
season are you up to? I'm like halfway through season two.
Okay, you've seen
Spoilers if
quite a
you
while.
haven't seen Buffy, Angel has just gone evil. It's all very dramatic. But yeah, I'm
And
really
she's
excited.
incredibly still married to Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah.
Oh,
Good for them.
yeah,
Good for
that's
them.
proper icon behavior. I just assumed all those marriages would d dissolve at some point. You know what?
Well,
Good
they're
for
not.
them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, look, again, the Sarah Michelle Gellar show goes on, and we are all thankful for that. I'm just looking at her video. Oh, she was in Clerks 3. Oh, well, there we go. Anyway, I was very sick on the weekend, so I watched NPL New
Oh.
South Wales to soothe my flu, which was really bad. I do not recommend getting sick, but other than that, I'm glad that we're on Sarah Michelle Gellar wavelength tonight.
Somehow I don't and not even building up
I'm
to it
so
from the
sorry.
start as well. We have
We're all suddenly on a Sarah Michelle Gellar podcast now. So sorry, everyone who tuned in
is
for football.
a-okay.
Oh dear. Let's get some football direction back here. Today's featured Matilda, Cap 194, Amy Harrison. Is like me, a child of Western Sydney. Shout out to her grassroots club, St Mary's Eaglevale in the MacArthur region to southwest Sydney. Matilda's debut in 2015, most recent cap in 2019, 13 caps, and she was a defender or a midfielder. and I'm not was still is because she's doing she's wearing the armband now for Western Sydney Wanderers. I think you, at least Dale, as someone who has lived in that part of the world, if my memory serves me correctly, your thoughts on Amy Harrison, who has come back from some, you know, she's one of the growing a member of the growing ACL club. I think, has she done it twice? But
I think she's had three ACLs. I think that if you were to write the stereotypical MacArthur football pathway story, it would be modeled on Amy Harrison. I remember it must have been prior to the last World Cup. When Harrison was selected, they did a big thing down at St. Mary's Eaglevale, which was actually one of my local clubs when I was living in Campbelltown. Mm. And I feel like that, like the clubhouse is named after her. I could be wrong, but yeah, local junior. I think she was born in Camden and then grew up in kind of Western Campbelltown, out near on the western side of the M5, at least. And yeah, went through St. Mary's. She was a well-known member of that all-conquering kind of generation of MacArthur Rams women's players. Went on to play for Sydney for an extended period of time. Swapped to play for Wanderers. Recall correctly, didn't she also play for PSV?
She did.
And yeah, now she's captain at Wanderers. And I think, you know, she seems quite happy there, which is really good. She was a funny one going into the 2019 World Cup, though, because obviously she was quite young. Well, not quite young, but she was a younger member of the squad at that point, and she hadn't been given a lot of game time. And then there was that moment when the Norway game was about to go to penalties, and then she was brought on instead of Mary Fowler, which would have tied Mary Fowler to playing for Australia. And Harrison was brought on to take penalties, and I think she took a penalty and scored, but I can't recall because that game I've tried for a long time to wipe from my mental hard drive. That was it was a funny game. But yeah, I mean, she's one of these players that, like, every time an injury crisis, like the one that, well, crisis is a bit of a G up, but every time an injury glut comes around, like we're having at the moment, which we'll come on to later, she's always one of those players who kind of gets put in the picture. And I think that is a credit to her, purely because she's almost like the next Ivy Lewick cab off the rank, in that she can play basically anywhere in the midfield, anywhere in defense. She could do a job on the wing if you had to put her there. I probably wouldn't put her up front, having seen some of her finishing efforts over time, although she did score that bomb for the Wanderers in that 5-0 win over Sydney. But yeah, she's the kind of, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. And I think that, like, there'll be more caps to come, to be perfectly honest, because we will need more players that are more versatile going into tournaments as we kind of age out of the stalwarts that we've had kind of doing those jobs up until this point. But yeah, Harrison she's definitely, if you were a young girl or a young boy and you were from that region, and someone was to say, oh, you know, I want to play for the Matildas one day, well, you know, that's the kind of person that you look up to. You kind of follow that path.
Yeah. So, by the way, I was doing some quick research. St. Mary's Eagleville hosted something called the Amy Harrison Cup. About 2 weeks ago. So that was retweeted by the Wanderers Women's account. So local youth engagement there, and the perfect name for that. She's also spent some time at Washington Spirit. And yeah, I think I remember her, Sydney using her as an overlapping fullback, which is in a season which ended with one of her ACL injuries. And, you know, like, she's had to reinvent herself. I think possibly this happens with knee injuries. Unfortunately, you lose a bit of pace, but now she's still doing great things as in the center of the Wanderers defense. And, you know, big part of the reason they nearly made the finals, and like, it's a season that, oh, we think we all thought was going to be a disaster after the coaching change 10 days out from the season, but it turned out not to be that way. And Amy Harrison deserves a lot of credit for that. Also, to your point about getting more caps, Dale, turns 28 this month. So lots of football left.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that's it. Yeah, we like versatility, and especially with limited squad sizes, especially for the Olympics. I think she might get a chance in the future. Now, that's what are we? Oh yeah, let's go to the big ticket item on in these pod notes: Australia versus Mexico. So, those of us who can watch a game at work, you've got a treat. Wednesday, 10 a.m. And so that will be was it oh is it 10 play, and we'll just I think is it the main Channel 10
I think it's on
channel as
Channel
well?
10, yeah.
Channel, yep,
It should be.
excellent.
I'd be
Yep.
stunned if they had something
What else is going to
better
be on?
to put on
I
TV
mean, that
at
hasn't stopped them in the
10 a.m.
past,
on
but
a
yeah, I hope it's the same
Wednesday.
day.
Joe Hildebrand talking about how he hates brown people. I don't know.
That's a well,
Studio
yes,
10.
anyway.
Studio 10 for another 4 hours of delicious content. No, as if there's anything that I've got at 10 o'clock in the morning. Although, you know what is, you know who I do really love this for? The studio crew. They can just get up,
Ah, yes.
early morning
So
as opposed to having to work late into
it's
the
like
night.
normal working, just like,
Yes. You can rock into work at 6 o'clock to get everything set up. Happy days, as opposed, and then you knock off at what, like 2? Cheering. Good job, studio. Good job, 10 studio staff. Bad job, studio 10 staff.
Any thoughts on the actual game? I mean, we'll get onto it, well, just after we discuss the game. There are some injuries. But what are we what are we looking for from this game?
Survival.
I
Yeah.
yes. I
Yeah,
also like
no.
survival, so good, well said, match.
It's giving trial by fire for a lot of these players if they get game time. But you know, it is what it is. It's happened to Matildas many times before. Happened just recently, actually, against Canada. So
Yes.
you know. I can say I'm not looking forward to the media storm that will come through if we do lose, because that'll be
Yeah.
oh, it's about to be Olympics. Tony's rubbish, off with his head. Just
Yeah.
that'll be fun for absolutely no one except for the people trying to peddle clicks.
And then when
Ugh.
he inevitably just goes to his next job, they'll feel like they've
Yeah.
vindicated and they made it
Why didn't
happen.
he stay?
Oh yeah, just
I wonder. But
um.
I do
You
want,
guys,
and to be
you
honest,
media made it so hard for him to leave.
but the way that Tony has played these things before, it's really hard to tell whether or not he's going to go for that consistency approach, the strong team, to try and sort of build those combinations that he wants to see during the Olympics, knowing that, what is it then? It's just the two China games. Is there another
Yeah, I
window?
think so.
That's
I don't think there's another
for
window between now and then.
unless
no.
they or could they even fit in like a really a pre-Olympics
They could do something
friendly
like,
or
I mean, they could do anything behind closed doors because
yeah.
the window is 4 weeks, I think, during the Olympics, and the tournament only goes for two.
And so yeah, you do wonder, like, what with the injuries that have happened just in this training camp, maybe the training sessions have been a little bit more intense than usual. Like maybe they've been using those as the bit of the audition to stake your claim to actually get game time for this Mexico game and really, you know, make your last stand for making it into the Olympic squad. So who knows, that they maybe they've just been a bit more intense. Maybe it's just bad, horrible luck. These players are playing a lot of football, so
That is a good point. They're also like they were in camp in Florida as well. So I would imagine that the change in conditions for a lot of the players who have been in Europe in terms of heat and humidity would have been quite something. But yeah, there has been a lot of bad luck in terms of the players. We've got four players stepping out of this squad with injuries that they've sustained in camp. Or immediately prior to camp. So yeah, it's a bit of a tough one. I did just have a look because I always worry when we play games specifically in North America, but this stadium is grass, so
Ah,
that
good
is a
point.
lot of weight off my
So,
shoulders in terms of worrying
yes,
about player
and
safety.
Socceroos fans know exactly what Dale is referring to as well.
Yeah.
Yay, Texas. Ugh.
Yeah, it is at least,
Equilibrium.
yeah. San Antonio is dry as anything, but yeah, I do believe that it is a grass surface. San Antonio is an extremely dry part of the world. It's basically built on limestone. It has a fake river that runs through the middle of it. But yeah,
What?
I will be interested. Yeah, it has a river walk that's not actually a natural river. Long story. A very interesting place though.
So I how are the visuals then from this fake river? Does it?
Yeah, strained. But yeah, with this, I think that if we lose, like obviously I think people are going to be, blowing their lids about this, but like I mean, Mexico beat the US pretty handily only a couple of weeks ago.
They
Or
did.
what was it in the gold in the
It
Gold
was
Cup?
2-0.
So,
Gold Cup,
yeah,
correct.
that and they
2-0 in the Gold Cup, and they were
played quite
convincing.
yeah, they played quite well. Like if we were to lose to Mexico, I don't think that would be a great shame. If we were to lose poorly to Mexico, obviously it would be a
Yeah.
trouble. It would be a worry. But there's no in. I mean, outside of the scoreboard, there's no losses, only lessons in these games. You need to kind of put them into perspective. But I am interested that he hasn't called up any kind of. I mentioned this to you, Eric, today, but any highly rated college players that might be available in that in the States. Whether they're, just to come and train, they don't have to be. They wouldn't have to be released by the colleges, and obviously it would be a bit of paperwork and like per diems and stuff. But yeah, I'm sure that they. I mean, if they were like, oh, we need to have 20, we need to be playing an 11-on-11 game at training. We only have 21 players. Maybe we go and get three players from three Aussie players from college or whatever, just to give them a run. But yeah, I was surprised that that wasn't floated or. It wasn't made public.
Yeah, I mean, yes. As a friend of the pod, like you said, the Tegan Mica
Yeah.
career path. Once her first Matildas call up, just because she happened to be playing college on the same side of the country as where the Matildas were, and look at her now. So, anyway.
Exactly. Apparently, there was someone who ran a website dedicated to those players that they
You
could
mean
have
the
reached out
Australians
to.
toiling away at college soccer at various U.S. Tertiary education institutions? Well, if
Yes.
only such a person existed.
Yeah.
Google College Matildas and learn something if you don't know who we're referring to. Now, so obviously we'll cover that in the next pod, but in terms of national team news, there was also the Australia. Oh no, actually, sorry. Before we get to the Australian under-23 team, a journalist who stands head and shoulders above the rest, Samantha Lewis, wrote an article today about the Matildas' growing injury list. And yeah, thanks for recognizing that, Dale. And it, yes, I don't know if anyone else has anything to add. I mean, I know we spend a lot of time on this podcast just lamenting injuries and worrying about even more injuries. So maybe we don't need to cover this in depth. But I think that. Tone of the article. By the way, the Sam's introduction to this piece, which is linked in the show notes, is fantastic. 11 out of 10, Sam. But yeah, just what my main take was, we're basically being dragged kicking and screaming into creating depth by people breaking down, which is not nice, but every problem is an opportunity for someone else.
I think like with this, we've seen this happen before, and I think that that got us to kind of where we were in terms of where we were in terms of the World Cup. And we had this problem at 2019. Obviously, we had Laura Brock go down. We had was it Polk's go down,
Yep,
and
that's right.
then we had immediately after that, I think we had further injuries. I mean, we had Ford go down in what 27 20 2017 2018. We've had like we've been here before, but I mean we have always had a depth of players that were available. But yeah, as you say, I think that it's not necessarily that we don't have the players available. I think it's just that the world of football has caught up to us in that the technical proficiency needed to be an elite footballer now is not what we have excelled with creating within our footballers. And the men's game has struggled with this for a long time. And I think that the women's game is as we have seen with like teams like Spain and, you know, Italy and the kind of the new kind of wave of South American teams that are becoming more, well, making results less predictable, as we said with the Mexico result. Like, we have for so long done so well on just pure physical brilliance, and now we're kind of like, oh, we actually need to have pure physical brilliance and, you know, be able to have a bit of football IQ and that kind of thing. And now to take that not just like from the dub and then take that to the international level, where that where we're competing with players who live, eat and breathe this just as much as we do now and have the same opportunities. Yeah, it's a, I think it's a big, kind of staring us square in the face now. But that's what Tony wanted prior to the last World Cup. You know, we capped 20 players in 3 years or something ridiculous.
While you chat, I will count how many Matildas have gotten their start from Tony.
I don't think it was unreasonable to sort of like have an ideal pathway to be, okay, home World Cup, that's the pinnacle. And then you've got an Olympics basically 1 year on from that. You essentially taking probably a group that you're priming up to that and probably not wanting to tinker too much. But unfortunately, it's bringing, I think, a bit more experimentation a little bit earlier than the normal women's football cycle than perhaps we would have liked. But, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I agree. I think this is like, because in terms of our tournament structure, it's Asian Cup, World Cup, Olympics.
Yeah.
So I think that this would have been the Asian, well, we're not going to have Asian Cup qualifiers, but if we had have had to, this would have been our Asian Cup qualifiers experimentation. Now we're like, oh shit, we've kind of got to hit the go button. Well, we've only got three friendlies to do this. And that, I think, is, I know we'll come on to this later, but like, that's why I think they've been pushing the under 23s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With and looking to produce at under 20s, trying to push the under 20s as much as possible to play these games, as many games, the tour as much as possible. And I think that that's really good. Like, I think that's an adequate allocation of resources. Like, that it's great to say, oh, you know, we could be doing more. I know this is very pie in the sky. Oh, we know we could be doing more school camps, or we could be doing, you know, we could be hiring another admin staff, or we could be blah, 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 whatever. But like, in terms of on the field performance, this is your kind of Gantt chart of performance, in terms of elevation of the senior squad. And we're seeing that now with, as you were saying, with the players that have been picked in this team that have been, or in the squad that have been kind of by the wayside up until this point. And as I said, those players that were picked prior to the World Cup, we knew that was what we needed for then, to have as many cards in the hand as we had. But now, as you said, I think we weren't expecting to continue the metaphor, to shuffle the deck again until we were looking at 2026. But, you know, as you said, every sunset is, as you said, Eric, every sunset for someone is a sunrise for someone else.
Yeah. And I'll, by the way, 22 Matildas have been given their debuts by Tony Gustafsson, which is...
We've capped so many Matildas that now some of them are going and playing for other countries.
Yes, yes, that it's
We have a surplus of footballers.
At least two.
Yeah.
And we will talk about them later this year as well. So, and I say two, I mean two being, for now. Yeah,
we're getting so many of them in that everyone's like, okay, why aren't I in?
Yeah, so, our cup of young footballers runneth over.
Yes, and then
I don't think I'm that concerned about the injury crisis. Like, it felt a lot scarier a few years ago because it was literally like, okay, we have Claire Polkinghorne and Alana Kennedy, and those are our centre backs.
Yes,
and that is it. Like, it felt very scary then, but now. I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm used to it that I'm not, like, you know, panicking. I know there's lots of, like, people that are newer to following the Matildas and they're, like, you know, absolutely tearing their hair out about it. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
This happens.
Yeah.
We seem to do this.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to what I presume will happen is Claire Wheeler getting significantly more minutes and seeing what she can do. Like that was a killer of a midfield to try and break into, and but then here's a golden opportunity for her to really impress. So that they're the sorts of things to be excited about. And
I'm crossing my fingers for Charlie Grant as well.
Yes.
So I'm feeling that Steph Catley will probably be moved into centre back. And if there's if there's anyone else in that left back position that's not Charlie Grant, I'm literally going to be on the next flight out. I'm sorry, Tony. Tony, what are you doing, brother?
Yes. And as they say, water covers two-thirds of the Earth's surface. Claire Wheeler covers the other third. So, yeah, I'm team Claire Wheeler on this one. Give her more than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Please. Please. This was referenced, so now I might as well get on to this. The Australian under-23 team, during the May and June international window, they'll play Sweden, Germany, and Poland. This has been a thing pushed for the reasons that we have just said. Who do we think should be in the squad? Because I got strong opinions, so leave it at that.
Winnie.
Charlotte McLean.
She's not eligible. Players born 2001 and later. Charlotte McLean was born in 2000.
There's a lot of good players.
Still 2022.
Winnie Heatley is 2001, so she would be born 2001, so she would be eligible.
I was going to say, I'm just having a look at the press release. Amy Sayer and Jada Wyman have both been called up for the Matildas recently. I assume that Wyman is still available. I would say Chloe Lincoln will be in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say
that'd be silly not to take her.
Yes. I would say Morgan Aquino. Is she available?
I think she's old.
I've already looked this up.
This is just me. This is great pod contact. Me just Googling player name and DOB. Nope, Morgan Aquino, 2001 is eligible.
There you go.
Is 99 though. So 99.
No, well, there you go. We found out two goalkeepers.
Aquino and Lincoln sorted. And wow, we have a youth national team, and one of the goalkeepers isn't from Canberra. Didn't know we were allowed to do that. But hey,
I know, very strange. but yeah, this is the thing, as you said, that's like. This is like exciting. This is the whole thing. This reminds me of the mid-90s when Australia and Australia A would play cricket against each other.
Oh,
yeah.
This is the kind of thing that we need. We need for the Matildas B, which is effectively what this is, to play in the reverse kits
that
the A team play in.
Green.
Oh, green jersey. Teal shirt and gold shorts.
I don't know.
What we're talking about.
Can we have a green home kit? With green home kit and maybe we'll go for, we can keep the teal. The teal is a good mix-up.
I'm
just very scared about what you might have said there.
Yeah.
Any options you could have taken.
Yeah. Well, I think teal, like teal, the turquoisey tealy colour, we can keep that as the away kit, and then an all green home kit for the Matildas under 23s. Come on, Nike. You love merch and money.
Do they?
Yeah, I mean,
how long did it take them to make a goalkeeper kit? Don't tell me they like money.
Maybe they
did. Did they stock it properly?
No. They could play in purple. I'm a man ahead of my time.
God. I just realized if such a thing would happen, I would be the first and possibly only Australia women's under 23 ultra.
Yes.
Sorry, Madge. We if that game happens, we're on opposite sides. I apologies in advance.
would we be taking like Sasha Grove, Danny Gallich?
Very, very eligible.
I mean, they're definitely very eligible.
Yes,
surely they'd go, even if they end up just being like train on players because they're quite young.
I could see Grove and Gallich starting for an Australian under.
I mean, I know, but you know, like you want to make sure because they can play in other. Like other age divisions as well.
Yeah, true.
And give other people a run.
How old's Sarah Hunter?
2003. So,
Hunter's
eligible.
Yes.
By the way, just to clarify this, I picked up a habit from Australian youth coaches of referring to players by their year of birth. This is why this is why I can do this so quickly. So
yeah, I was going to say there is that Scout Aussie account or whatever
yes.
it's called that just refers to them as surname in brackets.
Year of birth. Yes.
I'm just having a quick look through. Yeah, there's a few. Oh, there's plenty that here. Like, Danny Garlidge.
I mean, it's most of the dub, to be honest. So.
Yeah, Courtney mm-hmm. Nevin, Holly McNamara. She's 22. Remy Simpson. No, that's where it starts.
No, Remy Simpson is 90s.
Yeah, Nevin, McNamara, Charlize Rule, Sarah Hunter, Rules. Daniela Garlidge, capped Matilda or selected Matildas that are eligible.
Getting to at least one camp. Of course, to keep the Victory Vikings happy, the world's greatest right back, Polly Doran, would be eligible for this. And
Sean Fryer.
Yep.
She is 22. She's July 2001. Yeah. We have crossed the Rubicon where Ellie Carpenter would not be eligible for this tournament. Which is very sad.
Yes.
For me specifically, as time continues to move. but yeah, I think it's a great idea. I really love it. I think that there should like there's always the whole thing with like youth internationals and you know you're never playing against it's never the same as playing against fully grown men or fully grown women. Mm. Whereas I think that this is yes it's still younger players but like this they filled out into their bodies they're like at the peak of their powers in terms of their like they're not going to get any bigger for want of a word they might get stronger but they're not going to be you know. It's not going to be a marked difference, but yeah, I think it's a really good idea. I think that not necessarily FIFA, but I think federations should be really looking into this kind of thing a lot more. And I think 23 is also a good cutoff because it's, as you guys know, with women's football, they start so young and they mature so quickly. So at least at 23, yeah you've got a good cutoff as you've got super experienced players at 26, 27, and then you've got fringe players, as I said, basically an A team or a B team.
And getting in like, the quality of those teams and the pedigree of like a Sweden and Germany with their youth development systems playing against them, I think is a real step up as well. So I think that's exciting. The quality of the opponents that these players will be able to test themselves against and you know, see where they stand. And
of course I just assume this is, of course the under 23 Tillies are always going to be in Europe just because that's where Europe's got the strongest youth national team scene just because they're all the countries are so close to each other and it's much easier to organize youth international football than it is in say Asia.
Yeah, I was going to say to Madge's point, like it's super encouraging that we were invited to this.
That's
I think that yes, we're ranked what 10, 12 in the world at the moment,
like
but like for us to be invited to, you know, like this isn't like Eurovision. Like, we were already in the EBU. This is like, hey, do you want to come to this cool party? Actually, a party with four people doesn't sound all that cool. I'd like to rescind that description. It's more like, do you want to come to this LAN party? We're going to be playing week two on CD-ROM.
At the risk of losing Emma with those references, well done, Dale.
No. I know what that is.
Please. It's referenced in one of her Buffy episodes.
Yeah, they have the big computers in those.
I used to own one of those. Yeah, they're the big mobile phones as well.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, those
a lot of storylines in Buffy could have been resolved by having mobile phones.
Yeah, just by texting.
Yes. There are so many like sitcoms that just don't like that wouldn't work anymore. So many episodes of Seinfeld would not work because you'd just be able to text.
Modern Seinfeld is very funny though. There is a lot of content around like modern Seinfeld and.
Oh, I know. Broad City is probably a very.
Yeah, it's a good shout actually.
A good example of that. So you can still have your situational comedies. Mm. They just also have phones.
Like I can't remember where I saw this, but I think as mobile phones got more and more common, someone made a very good point. That's why in a lot of movies they make it so the reception goes out because of so the plots work. Because otherwise, yes. Anyway, Yes, and of course, yeah, as for my opinions to be in the squad, just got to get this out there. I mean, if you rearrange the letters of Tory, you get riots, and that is what I might do if Tory Tumuth is not in the Australia under 23 team. But anyway, let's move. Although,
Have you been planning that line this whole
we
time?
do need to keep that
Oh, yes.
quality pipeline of redheads.
Yes.
Sasha Grove? Hello?
Like that alone should be like
Oh,
some
so.
sort of quota.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the Claire Polkinghorne, Courtney Vine rule. I
Yes.
see. Bidigo. Oh, Bidigo does
Going
need.
back, collect
no, Bidigo
Manum.
won't eligible.
make that.
But which means just put
Won't
her in
make
the
that
senior
cut.
squad, clearly. But
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah. Just get her in there.
if she can fit it in around being a doctor or whatever.
Yeah, being a licensed medical professional.
Yes. I feel like I'm missing a
Ridiculous.
redhead. Apologies to whoever that non-Sasha Grove redhead is that I haven't mentioned. It's really bothering me now. By the way, Australian sports, we love a nickname for our national teams. Australia under 23 doesn't really roll off the tongue. Any ideas? Because I've got nothing, absolutely nothing for this team. In terms, at least
Matildas,
some, in terms
Matildas, and Matilda bees? No, that's
of,
too hard to
yeah.
say.
I don't have anything off the
I'm,
top of my head.
the only thing that's coming to mind is the under 23 lees, but that's still
We
not
can work on
good.
that. We can work
Yeah,
on
there's
that.
some thank you for
Go to
asking.
Lees and the bilbies? No. There
Yes.
has to be something there. There
Yeah.
has to be.
It might.
Yeah. I don't know. Because like the other youth teams are the young and the juniors,
Yeah.
but these
But
are
what are
neither.
they?
These
They're
are
just like
adults.
the adults.
But they're not the adult adults.
I
They're
don't know.
the technically you're an adult, but if something
Yeah.
bad happens, you're still gonna look for an adult
Yes, yeah.
situation.
First car Tillies.
Oh dear. This
Have
is
a sponsor, they have a car sponsor.
Good point.
I'm doing my best. I
Yeah.
feel like I've got a lot to work
The
with. Do we
getting
just
off your parents' health insurance
Yeah.
buzz.
Technically
no,
full
because they extended that because of COVID.
yeah,
But
full train
I'm
fare
still on my parents'
tillies.
insurance. Still
Oh
there.
dear. Ah, well,
That's really
that's something the whole
good.
country has to workshop. That is yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this wouldn't be great, but I mean, do we just succumb to the inevitability of capitalism and just sell the nickname off to whoever wants to pay for it and fund
Yeah,
a
we
high
can.
performance program? I don't
Yeah.
know.
Our nicknames have not been very high performance, so if they would like to sponsor that, then they may well do
Please.
that.
I mean, we could just go back and recycle the list of unsuccessful names from
God.
the
Yeah.
Matildas.
Yes.
The Socceroos. What else is on there?
The
Oh.
Socceroos.
The Socceroos.
That'd kind of slap.
That was
Like, I won't
definitely
lie. Yeah,
a.
I quite like the Socceroos, to be
Can you
honest.
imagine that? Like, you're going to like an
You know
international
what? That
tournament
actually
and they're
makes
like, oh, so
that
what team do
works.
you
They're the
play for?
two.
Socceroos, mate.
And they're the
Socceroos.
two team. They're the twos.
Oh, they're the second.
It works
They're
on many
technically the
levels.
second team. Oh.
The Blue
But
Flyers,
will it confuse
the
people?
Waratahs, that's a bit too New South Wales. I don't.
Yeah,
For
no.
the Lorikeets?
Stop with this New South Wales bias. Get out of here.
Yes.
The budgies. Like, how did Lorikeet make it on?
I mean, you and I both remember the mid-90s. How? Oh, hang on. What's happening?
The frill neck li lizards, the frillies.
The Frillies.
The
Woo!
Frillies is very good.
That's it.
And
Okay.
I love a frill neck lizard. That's a great logo. That's a great icon. Great animal to have running around.
Clubhouse leader. That is the clubhouse leader. Thank you so much, Madge, for your contribution, for your continuing contribution to Australian football.
The frillies. That yeah. That
That
hitch.
may
That's
even
good.
be the pod title, the Frillies.
Yeah.
That's definitely winning. That's definitely the
Lots of
best.
lots of headline options there. Good, solid businesslike win, no frills.
Hey.
Could be, if they have a very nail-biting win, we could have all Friller.
Yes.
Friller in
All kill
Manila.
oh yeah,
The
if we
Philippines.
beat the Philippines, come on, I'm down for
Ooh.
that.
Look. This is, I think we've stumbled upon something.
Yes.
I think we've done the job for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we've gone real high performance real quick.
Yes.
Excellent.
Which
Too
I
high, too
ironically,
performance.
going high performance really quick, ironically, mirrors what we do to our elite athletes. Anyway,
Yes, yes.
anyway, let's move on to the dumb final series. Yep. So it's really one for Emma's people. So both games in suburban Melbourne. So Saturday, 13th of April, 6:30 p.m. Western United versus Newcastle Jets in Tarnit. Sunday, 14th of April, 4 p.m. Melbourne Victory versus Central Coast Mariners. The Dumont Derby at the home of the Matildas. I think I said this last week, but probably worth reiterating because it's this weekend. And I've put in the show notes a link to the explanation of the new final series format because a me doing it verbally will not do anyone any good, won't teach anyone anything. But the winners of these one-off games, both in Melbourne on the weekend, they'll play Sydney FC and Melbourne City in the two-legged semi-finals. And then that this will all end in a grand final, which at this stage they plan to play it on Saturday, the 4th of May. So, yeah, set your calendars accordingly. One-off football's odd. Like, and yeah, I don't know about you three. I got nothing in terms of picking this, even though I know Victory beat the Mariners fairly comfortably recently. Oh, wait, no, that was City. My bad. Forget I said anything about that. Yeah, I got this. I mean, I'm anticipating at least one of these would go to extra time. It's two really tight matchups.
I mean, we have spoken about how Victory kind of seemed to go to another level when it comes to finals for some reason. They just don't like to get it done the easy way. So it wouldn't surprise me if they wanted to drag it out to extra time just
Oh.
because they like that. But yeah, I don't know if I could, like, I wouldn't bet on any outcomes. You're not gonna make any money unless you're just stupidly lucky, and you should also buy a lottery ticket if you do.
Yeah, I think this feels like the most. This feels like the most even, and I think this is one of the good things about having a 16 final series. There's no real clear. I'll be honest, any team can win the comp from here. And especially, I mean, we go 1 week after this, you're looking at a home and away match. I don't think there's any. There's no like the way that we saw Newcastle play in the last round against Adelaide, and the way that we saw Sydney play against Melbourne, the way that we saw City play. I mean, there's no. It's typical to say that, or stereotypical to say that the form book goes out the window. But like, it's not even the like. There's no form book to worry about because these teams haven't played each other in it could be 12 weeks now. Just we don't really have that kind of form to go on. So I'm going to be super. I'm not going to pick a winner, but I'm going to be super super interested to watch these games. And I also think that the fact that both of these games are being played at smaller venues, they're going to be super super tight. I think the atmosphere is going to be great. Tarnit actually looks. I mean, it is in the middle of nowhere. We can't
Oh,
really get around that.
it
But
really is.
oh, yeah.
yeah. But you know, credit to them. They're the only football club in the league that owns the stadium. So that aside, yeah, I think the fact that they're going to be at such small grounds is going to be really good for the viewer. And you'll also get to see the softly blowing wind across the grass, like out at Tarnit, like you're in Gladiator.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll get to the game in Tarnit because I'm having a little look-see
What, because
on
is that because Google Maps doesn't know
where.
where it is yet, so you won't be able to find you
Honestly,
either?
yeah. I just want to see how far away it is from me now.
I was just going to say, I wonder how far it is. Is there even a what you have to get off at? You have to get off at Hoppers Crossing, or is there a train station at Tarnit now? Oh no, there is a
I
train
wasn't
station at Tarnit.
even thinking about getting a train, I'll be honest with you, because I live in the east
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Tarnit
You'd
is
have to go
very
all the way
much
across.
in the west. Like, it's literally almost an hour drive and it'd be an hour and a half ish on public transport, and you'd still have to get a ride from the station.
It's closer to Avalon. Station. It's closer to Avalon than it is to the CBD.
Oh God, Avalon is a very strange place.
Yeah, so
very strange. The airport is one of the weirdest, like the oddest places I've ever been on Earth.
Yeah, it does. It this week on Aviation Weekly. Yeah, it's a funny old place, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think these two games are going to be cracking, to be honest. And I think that the teams will both be better for the week off, except for Melbourne Victory, who are going to be without Emily Gilnick most likely.
Yeah,
which is a bit of a bummer. But yeah, don't be surprised if either of these games go to pens.
Yeah. So, well, if that's the case, I mean, the Mariners might have a secret weapon for said penalty shootout. But anyway, the game has to go to penalties first. Let's see. So obviously we'll cover those in the next podcast. Now, some news here. And by the way, well done to you, Dale, for collating some average attendance stats. Tell me, the A-League Women, now the fifth most attended women's football league. First to fourth in orders. See, NWSL in the USA. No surprises. Then the FAWSL in England, then the Frauen Bundesliga in Germany, and fourth is Liga MX in Mexico, which only 8 spectators ahead of us. So,
in a country of 200 million people.
Oh yes. So
we have the lowest population here by
a long
75%.
And you know what? And if it wasn't for the venues of Victory and Western Sydney.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially.
And City as well.
And City, yeah.
Yeah, Casey Fields is awful. But yeah, you're 100%
I like Madge's approach to statistics here. Almost like we should redo the numbers without games at the home of the Matildas Wanderers Football Park and City's venue. Redo the average. Jump ahead of Mexico into fourth.
But yep. I do not want to do maths. I have done enough maths. And by that, I mean going to Wikipedia. I found this super, super interesting where, like, you have countries like Spain and France and Italy that have, you know, obviously traditionally hugely popular football cultures, and that they have kind of woken up to women's football in the international game at least, and with kind of their big three or their big two respectively. But yeah, not really represented in an increase in average attendances. Obviously teams like Lyon and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid still garner quality attendances. But yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised when I saw that, you know, the A-League women's average has gone above 2,000 this year. And I believe that we are, I could be wrong, but I think that we are the 11th most popular women's sporting competition in the world. 11th or 12th, which is quite incredible.
Just like our ranking, just like the Matildas ranking.
Yes, which is super weird to think about. It's like NWSL is one, WNBA, and then Women's Super League, and then I think this doesn't take into consideration, like, this is professional sport. This doesn't take into consideration American colleges, so that's obviously slightly different. But I think if I was the APL, I would be putting that front and center on my media pack. One of the most attended women's football leagues in the world, which is wild when you think about it.
Yeah.
Good on us.
Yeah.
We're going to games.
Yeah.
Good on us. Especially us four, I think. Well done.
Us four specifically.
Well done, us four. We've done a lot to help this average attendance.
I'm
one of those averages. Numbers.
I was going
to
say,
at least 0.5. Actually, I haven't made any away games this season, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because the one game that I did like move away from Brisbane for was still my home game.
That's right.
Yes, that's right. Oh, that's right. So this is where I can work on technicalities and say, I have attended a Brisbane home dub game, just like those Wellington and Perth home dub games that I've also attended. And Western United, of course, famously, twice.
Very true.
What I get. Sorry, there's a bit of a pause. This is what I get for trying to add to the pod notes while we're having the discussion. I lost my place. Oh! Other news, Vesna Milivojevic signing for IFK Norrköping in Sweden. So she will become a star of our Nordic Raps when we resume that after the international break. Met myself and Stefan. And yes, for those of us that have seen her play futsal in an under-conditioned hall in the middle of Western Sydney, this is still a bit of a shock to see her achieving so much. But yeah, as a midfielder to what almost average nearly one goal every two games for Canberra, with the team not making the finals in either season, she was always going to garner attention. So I think well done to Vesna. She's previously played overseas in, I think, Germany and Serbia. Mm-hmm. And of course, is a Serbian international. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she does for Norrköping, which I think is the team Chelsea Dauber played with last season. But yeah, I think more broadly, I mean, I'm happy for people to disagree with me on this. Of course, with Canberra losing a player, with all that's going on in Canberra United, people are worrying. I'm not as worried about this type of a signing because the way she's played, she was always going to get overseas attention. I'd be more worried by, just to make a theoretical example, Emma Ilioski signing for Sydney. That would be quite concerning from a Canberra United perspective. But I don't know what you three think about that.
I think I agree. I
completely agree. Yeah.
So there we go. Well, wow, I've ordered the pod notes everybody. Correctly. I've ordered the pod notes correctly. So
controversy corner is over.
Yeah, that's
okay. Yeah, we did have this chat earlier and said that she was not guaranteed to get a job in Sweden because Serbia is not part of the EU, nor are they part of the European Economic Community. So she would have had to have gone through the work permit process. So yeah, obviously they've been working on this for quite a while. So
yeah.
I think your point about her being on the radar is definitely kind of rings true.
Yeah. But at least no idea what the Swedish work permit thing is like, but she basically plays every game for Serbia, which has got to help. Although Serbia's world ranking, maybe not helping so much, but yes. So on that note of Canberra United, we've got a link to the show note in rather large text. I mean, click here to donate to the Save Canberra United project. Of course, we all feel very strongly about this. Whatever you can spare, because some very hardworking people have started this. And I think, let me just see what we're up to as of the time of recording. Over $40,000. Nice. So, I mean, the target is $300,000, which is a lot. And we know that there's a cost of living crisis going on, but just whatever people could spare. Because, this is very important for Australian women's football. I've also linked to a Capital Football statement, which is the most recent I saw on April the 5th about the things. Not sure how much it says, but, the restrictions of corporate communication, blah, blah, blah. I was never going to say anything like really eye-catching, but it is there in case you want to read it. So I think onto this week's hot topic, which I think is more of a Imagine Emma thing, and also another Sam Lewis article. And I think a few of us saw this coming. Of course, there was the Matildas boom. We loved it. More interest in women and girls football. So more women and girls want to play. And now local clubs are struggling to accommodate this level of increased registrations. And it's a problem community soccer has had generally in this country, especially where I live, in terms of facilities. But it's the problem's quite acute this year for a lot of women's football clubs. And I don't know, just because obviously this is something I won't have as much experience with, but imagine Emma, I mean, your thoughts on just what it's like as a woman playing community sport? Because it's not always great. The silence says a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to start, really. It just, the whole article, I get it, but it's really pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because they knew this was going to happen.
Yep.
They spoke about this happening.
Yes.
And now it's happened and everyone's all shocked. Like, oh my God, how'd this happen? You knew.
Mm-hmm.
You knew. And it's very annoying because I've never actually played football. May come as a shock to some people. I played field hockey for a number of years though, So similar, had a similar sort of deal. We always, like, we had to do warm-ups in like the car parks of like the grounds sometimes before games. And we'd always get like the crap training times. Like you just get the absolute worst of everything. And now that like they can't even find places for girls to play, especially considering how much of an issue it is keeping girls and women in sport, it's just so annoying. Like, we know that this is a problem. It's been a problem for years. Why just always the like second thought, or not even thought of at all. It never changes, really. It doesn't, like, it hasn't changed since when I was playing community sport. Doesn't look like it's going to change unless someone somewhere decides to pull their finger out. But yeah, it's really disappointing because, yeah, we knew it was going to happen. And shock horror, girls and women want to play sport when they can see that there is a viable option for them. Let them. It, like, maybe cut the boys' practices a bit. No offense to no boys, but you guys have kind of had everything for the entire time of the history of Earth. So maybe cut their practices a little bit. Maybe they have to practice on half the pitch or a third of the pitch. Because God knows I've had to. Like, we'd have multiple girls, like, we'd have two girls' teams at the local hockey club, and we had to each train on half the field. So maybe they can do that. Maybe they can put multiple boys. I mean, they won't, because suggesting this would have so many people losing their entire heads, but it's an option. Start there whilst you're developing new grounds, obviously.
I think, yeah, I mean, one of the other issues is, of course, just football in general not getting the same sort of government support, council support, facilities support as some other sports, with not as many people clambering through the doors to want to play. And then, where are the grounds? Where's the space to. They're all on floodplains, of course. Hence why, as soon as it rains, everything's postponed as well, and training can't happen. Yeah, so I mean, it is hard, but it is interesting. And like, to be honest, I don't know that much about community clubs and what metrics they're expected to hold up to. But potentially, yeah, if growth of a club isn't an option, like if they've reached a cap for the number of grounds and everything that they have, and maybe, yeah, it should be about evening up the participation. So yeah, cut some of your boys' teams. If you've only got 15% women's teams at the moment and you're turning away new participants, maybe that's the first thing that you do. But yeah, it's no doubt multifaceted, from funding to space to proportion of facilities and allocation of facilities, upgrading facilities, building them, inclusive and fit for purpose in the first place. Yeah, and like the whole, yeah, I think that article talking about Leichhardt, even some of the grounds where our premium women's league are playing, and I have really, really substandard facilities to be, playing double headers or and I'm sure even just some of the change rooms are pretty old and skanky as well.
Oh, at
So
Leichhardt Oval? Yes.
yeah.
Yeah, I've
At
dealt
least,
with
I mean,
some
at least Perry Park got an
change
upgrade
rooms.
because of the World Cup. So, ooh, legacy.
Yay.
From a community perspective, I mean, I can't speak to my new club because we don't have juniors, but I know that it is, and I live in a fairly, I wouldn't say fairly affluent, but like I live in the inner south of Sydney. And like, while there are still pockets of working class areas, it's definitely much more middle class than it was 10 or 20 years ago. But it is, you go around here and any time of the weekend between 9 and 5, there are games going on and there are very, very rarely pitches available. And I think that as you both said, it's like, it's not even just, I think for me, it's simple things like installing lights, at grounds so that like players can play at like a 7 o'clock time slot, for example, or like you bring games forward by an hour. So then you can play games at, you know, 10 or what, even if you have to have an 8 o'clock kickoff, like 8, 10, 12, all the way through to 8 o'clock in the evening. And yes, that means that the pitches get eaten up a little bit more. And yes, they require a little bit more upkeep, but you kind of make that money back in regos and things like that. Mm. But yeah, like the facilities, I mean, even at our club, we're very lucky that we have, we play on an old heritage cricket ground, which is the pitch itself is pretty shot, but and we only have the two change rooms, but you know, I think that we would consider ourselves lucky to even have those, because I know that there are a lot of teams out west in Sydney, mm-hmm. you know, in the southwest specifically, where they've had this boom in in interest, and there's just no space because they've built houses everywhere because we've had to put people everywhere, and we haven't kind of thought this kind of thing through in the greenfields. I know that there, you think about MacArthur specifically, I know that there was, when we kind of turned back the clock as we were talking about Amy Harrison, I know that when they were building Oran Park in the greenfield suburbs out there, like Gregory Hills and things like that, they were very careful to put in big multi-use facilities. So they would have AFL fields, which obviously double as cricket fields, and then you have two soccer fields on side by side on them, and then you build two of them next to each other, and then you can put like a clubhouse and a stand and a barbecue area and things like that. And there was actually a little bit of air, there was a little bit of planning going into it, but we're kind of seeing the fact that we forgot all these things now, and yeah, the only thing we can do really is retrofit them as best we can and try and, yeah, as you said, Emma, like, you know, if we only get to take up a quarter of a field for training, like that's just what needs to happen. You need to be providing kind of equal access for all these players. And yeah, I think that's really the only equitable way that we can do these things. It's tough when you get, I think that you have people whose heart is in the right place in terms of volunteering for a community club, oh, yeah. and that they want to be doing the right thing by their club, but they would see that they have, let's just say that they have 70% boys and 30% girls, and you would say, oh, we have 70% boys and we're giving them, you know, 70% of our attention, for want of a word. But the thing is, you really have to be considering this from a whole of club perspective. Everybody has to be getting a go. It's not necessarily that they're boys teams or girls teams. You have to be treating them just, in my opinion at least, just as teams, so that everybody can get on, everybody can get a run. You try and adequately kind of crop dust these ephemeral facilities that we have, and you know, kits and bat balls and bags and stuff. And yeah, they're really in a no-win situation. It's so tough. There's that saying that's like, it's that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Like, this is exactly the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, we built all those houses in suburbia. Oh, we forgot the people that live in them might actually want to like go and kick a footy twice a week. We probably should have put in some like sporting facilities instead of being like, oh yeah, actually kids just like Xboxes. But now, yeah, we're kind of like, you could put the Metro underground. Unfortunately, you cannot put a football pitch in a tunnel 12 meters under Tallawong. Yeah, it's
yes.
No, you cannot.
As I said, they're on hiding to nothing. I feel for them. I think that community sports is one of the toughest. It's specifically community sports, like, you know, the kind of like Wednesday night six-a-side comp.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
yes, they attract assholes that, you know, want to take out their energy from the work week. But, like, man, the people that run those things, they're the real lifeblood of the sport. And as I said, I think they're on a hiding to nothing when it comes to this kind of thing.
Yeah, actually, that was that they're all thinking about my neck of the woods, where, yes, we have not been like MacArthur in planning green space and sporting space. It's not good in Northwest Sydney. But
And the point that Madge makes about, like, oh, they're always on a floodplain, it's like, and there are so many areas out there where it's like Manly, for example, like, you go kind of six streets, or, I mean, Wollongong's a good example. You've only really got like 12 streets worth of land, and then you hit like a hill and you're like, well, I can't put a football pitch on a 30 degree slope. So they, like, the town planners, obviously, when they're building these things, it's like, oh, well, where are we going to put this? We're just going to try and put it there. Yeah, it's just, it's always kind of treated as an afterthought. But, you know, good luck to them, I say. I'm happy it's not me.
Oh, yes. I mean, I do work for a local soccer association, but thankfully just in comms. So this is actually surprisingly not me either, thankfully, because I do not envy my colleagues when it rains. Oh, no.
Oh, the idea of, like, having to, I can't deal with scheduling a meeting at work, let alone trying to make football fixtures, not just for your club, but between clubs and the whole thing. Just no.
Yeah. Our game got rained out this week, and we got the email on Friday morning. And I was like, I've never seen an email come through quicker for a ground cancellation. And
we were very quick. Actually,
the ESFA was probably just like, nah, hit the big red button. We'll deal with this later.
That was the Sydney experience, because, oh my God, we got hit with a rain bomb late on Friday. Just to clarify this, because local associations don't exist in all states, but I know they don't in Victoria, but yes, in New South Wales, we have a extra level of governance between the state fed, underneath the state fed, local associations who have their good things and their bad things, but at least, yes, I'll just leave it at that. But, yeah, so I can't, this is an article I read years ago, but I wonder, in terms of actually getting participation in debate, the point was basically, do we actually need to recreate the sporting experience at an elite level just to get people involved? And it, like what you spoke about, Dale, the Wednesday six-a-side comps, all right. I mean, if 11-a-side football is too difficult, well, why don't we make it more informal? Why do we make the team smaller? Because at the end, just if it's about getting people involved, obviously, smaller teams, smaller fields, easier to organize. You can get more people on a field at the same time. So that might be something to look at. And as I'd be a pain and talk about things of my interest, I mean, futsal, if you can't, very easy to organize.
Football everywhere in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And futsal, of course, can share a facility with basketball and all kinds of indoor sports. So that's that. I think possibly, although, as I said, I'm glad it's not me, but yeah, we might need to be a bit creative in how we get people active.
That's one of the things. If you look at cities overseas, specifically cities, which I obviously think is where the kind of problem lies here, because, you know, if you go to Wee War, I'm sure you're not going to have a problem finding a space for a football pitch. Mm. But if you look at, there's one that sits with me very clearly, is that in Paris, there's athletics grounds and small, mainly athletics, stadia is a bit of a word, but like facilities with a track and a football pitch in the middle. But like everywhere you go, there'll be little caged basketball courts with goals under, like, built into the fence. And that's just where kids go for a kick. Like, you don't have to, if you're not an elite player, like if you're not playing first or seconds, for example, that's what you do to go down and have a kick. You go down to your local park, as opposed to signing up for a club. And I think that initial kind of, inoculation of the game, for want of a word, with the skills that they have in terms of a smaller sided game, breeds into then being able to be better footballers anyway. So you're kind of scratching two itches with, you know, with one hand, which really makes life a lot more easy when it comes to training them later on. But yeah, I always remember there's a big football pitch next to the Australian Embassy, which is right next to the Eiffel Tower. And then just down the road from there, under the underpass, that famous shot that you look back over the river on the metro, right under the metro tunnel, there's like a bunch of basketball courts. And I remember walking past there and just being like dozens of kids kicking a footy and me being like, okay, this is cool. I'm going to go and read the sports newspaper.
It probably speaks world. To like my, like, I'm even thinking of sports like golf, where a lot of our sort of elite players have come from rural areas, probably just because, yeah, every small town will have a football pitch, multiple football pitch, a tennis courts, golf course, because they've got the room to do it. But yeah, in our very packed cities where most of our population live, it's getting very, very crowded.
What if we took all of our city golf courses and turned them into lots of football pitches?
Sold. You have my vote, Mr. Dale.
Public housing and football pitches.
Yes.
I will be the mayor of the world.
I will just, as long as you add some futsal courts in there, great. I've got multi-use indoor and outdoor facilities.
I'll put them on top of the shopping centres. Like
yes!
The bunkers can turn into beach football.
Yeah, exactly. Like they had in Melbourne during lockdown. You can have a picnic. You can go and, look.
Much better use public of green all space. That space.
Oh,
much
well.
Better.
Solutions oriented.
That's what happened when the revolution comes.
Yes, that Sam Lewis article that started this wonderful discussion. Yep, that's in the show notes, linked in big text. It's going to be another 80-minute podcast. Oh, well, I can dream. But just briefly, as we go through the notes, I probably should chill out with the schoolboy errors thing with the APL media, but it just irks me when I look at a graphic for 2 seconds and I see an error. So, they got a graphic with the all-time biggest regular season crowns for standalone dub games. And yes, very, very nice stuff. Although Madge and I were pretty quick to point out errors. So if you saw that graphic, number six on the, that's in the show notes, but number six on the list, Sydney versus Melbourne City from this season, that was at Sydney Olympic Park Athletic Center, not Leichhardt Oval. And number nine on the list, Brisbane versus Sydney, wasn't played 2019-20. It was played this year. Mm-hmm. But of course, my main point on that is that Torrey Tumuth played in six of those games because Torrey Tumuth is box office. What else? Oh, yes. Sensible tweet. Shout out to one of my Filipino sisters, Aya, who just decided defenders for the A-League Women All-Stars, Torrey Tumuth, Jessica Cowart, Mackenzie Barry, and Claudia Chico. No, that is not my burner account. How dare you suggest that?
Yeah, and... sure. You shouldn't be outing yourself like this.
It even starts with the same letter as my public name. I've done a terrible job disguising that. You're right. I've been roasted and I'm called out by Dale there. And this special segment called They Grow Up So Fast. Mackenzie Barry had her 50th, because of Mackenzie Barry's 50th A-League game, the nice little short video from Wellington Phoenix showing her first game and her 50th game. And I thought, they do grow up really fast. Briefly, anyone got any takes on Euro 2025 qualifiers? I know pre-pod, someone noted that Spain beat the brakes out of Belgium. So,
yeah,
that's
that was me. That
yeah, and that will not be the last Spanish induced beatdown as well.
Yeah,
very good.
Also, the Netherlands losing to Italy 2-0.
Oh yeah, that's quite interesting. Ooh.
Which I think is pretty spicy. Germany only just pipping Austria in a rematch of the 1939
Anschluss. Whoa, oh God.
But yeah, I think that was super interesting. I can't believe that Germany, like, they are just absolutely off the deep end at the moment. We're going to beat them
era.
At the Olympics, and I'm going to...
In their flop era.
Exactly. I'm going to dance out in the streets. But yeah, that was
it
a
will
fun
be,
league,
5 a.m. when you're dancing
well, that's
in the
fine.
Street. But yes.
Be dancing in the streets as my neighbors come outside and shoot fireworks at me to tell me to shut up. They have been shooting a lot of fireworks around here for some reason recently. But yeah, other than that, not much. Greece only beating the Faroe Islands, a country with a population like less than the most local council areas.
One nil. Yeah, that's correct. That's right. Ireland once didn't go to a major tournament because they lost to Greece, and Greece are now in League C. Well, ha.
We'll also shout out Luxembourg for beating Albania 2-1. We love to see it. Luxembourg also micronation.
And what else? Oh, Malta, first time in League B, nil all draw with Northern Ireland. So that's actually a pretty decent result for Malta against a team that went to Euro 2020.
This is the whole reason that this exists. We love this.
Yes.
And the way that this qualifying works, I was going to say they go, what it's like, to a certain amount through League A, then they have playoffs.
So,
All groups are four
in League A. Yep, there is an explanation.
I've just seen it. Yeah, okay. Yes.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'll save that for some bedtime reading.
Okay, the bit I'm confident in explaining verbally is that League A is four groups of four. The top two from each of those four groups go automatically.
Right,
The Euro 2025. The rest is a very complicated playoff system. Good luck reading that explanation. But anyway,
I really feel like I've opened Pandora's box here. Clicking on a Wikipedia link that is just petabytes of data at this point.
It's so bad. Oh god. That's right. This is the window where Africa decides who represents them at Paris 2024. So from the first leg, Morocco beat Zambia away 2-1. Nigeria beat South Africa 1-0 at home. Yeah, Morocco. They do many things. They showed you can lose 6-0 in the group stage of a World Cup and still make the round of 16. Morocco showing many things are possible. And then I think what Lockie called fancy friendlies, the She Believes Cup. Japan scored a hilariously early goal against the USA, but lost 2-1. You tried, Japan. And then Canada defeating Brazil on penalties. And also, let me check my Twitter notifications, because as we're recording in the international friendlies, the Philippines are playing South Korea. They're losing 2-1, but Angie Beard has apparently just scored an absolute banger of a free kick.
I must say, I did enjoy her content about the trip to the Philippines, the trip to this game, for like commuting to this game. I thought that was super interesting. And just like, you know, we don't really see that kind of side of the player, the kind of lost Aussies. We don't really see that from them, which I find, you know, super interesting.
Yes. So, yep. I will have all those international results in the show notes. Also, NPL. For those of you that are interested, Stefan has done his wonderful work for Capital Football, because that's starting up again. Dale, anything you mentioned watching NPL New South Wales? Anything in particular?
I watched the Spartans Uni game, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was very under the weather. I did watch that. Manly game as well, and a very good call, may I say.
Thank you. Thank you.
It definitely aided me with my illness.
Yes.
And I will say, though, I watched the Jets-Rams game. Boy, howdy. Rams scored two goals in the first 75 seconds of that game. And, yeah, it was kind of good night of rain from that point.
It was. It also... I mean, a weird way to get to 7-0. Rams scored four goals in the first 16 minutes, and the other three goals were after the 80th minute. So
yeah, and the last goal from Mika Sunaga, who how she didn't get a dub contract this season. She's very, very good. But she basically receives the ball, first touch outside of the foot, nutmegs the defender, runs around the defender, and then first touch, bottom right-hand corner, past the goalkeeper. Ooh. Just like
silk.
Primo.
Magnificent. And shout out to Ashley Borg, who called that game while on a very, very dodgy scissor lift at Lake Macquarie Regional Football Facility. I've not been on it, but I've heard horror stories from a fellow commentator. So, I think they'll be giving that venue a miss. Also, speaking of kids losing, yes, I was on the mic as Manly United defeated Football New South Wales Institute by 3-0. And whenever my team beats Institute, I think of a certain meme which has Michael Jordan's face on it. Anyway. I'll complete the Queensland and Victoria scores just for those who are interested. Hope everyone's staying safe up there. There were a couple of postponements in Queensland, which I think was weather-related, Madge, would have been, or you're not sure?
You know what? I don't think there's been anything too major. I think it's just rain on probably flood-prone fields.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But a couple of hat tricks. Amy Gunston grabbed a hat trick in Lions' 4-0 win over Sunshine Coast, and Steph Latham for Brisbane City against Souths. So, yeah, those two powerhouses are chugging along.
Right. Good. Good stuff for them. And just not that I know much about the Victorian scene, but I'm always amused by it that they have a club called Box Hill United Pythagoras. What a name.
We do love that. I've just seen that the Angie Beard's goal was from like 30 meters out.
Oh my God.
I haven't seen the actual goal, but I'm just looking on SofaScore and it's like the next outside the D.
It is. Oh, that is a long way out. I will be. Yep. I will watch that video when we finish recording.
A likely
that.
Thing for Angie Beard to do, yes. Honestly.
Yes. It's. and Angie Beard, very, shall we say, of this podcast, from Queensland, has played in Melbourne and is a Philippines international. I'm sorry, I couldn't link you to Adele, but I tried.
That's okay.
Can't win them all.
Yeah, I'm used to the disappointment.
Anyway, sorry. Queens, Kings, and Emperors of the Week. It's time to wrap this up. I don't know, Madge, you can go first.
Oh, look, I'm just giving a shout out to our one man Dub and Woso memorabilia machine, known on Twitter as Monk FC. So Dean, Wellington Phoenix fan, does these amazing just emblems, player of the match things for Wellington. I think he does them for the Vikings to give to.
He does, that's correct.
Players as well. Match tokens, so whenever there's an international game that he's out. So just, you know, good fun fan collectible stuff. And he did me up an awesome Brisbane Roar shield, and I know he's done ones for other Roar fans and other Dub fans around the country. So yeah, just a really generous guy, and big king of women's football.
Massive king, and you know, really committed fan of Wellington Phoenix, and follows the Phoenix players and the Phoenix alumni when they play. If you can see them in NPL New South Wales, he's also, I don't know if my camera picked up this Ireland badge for me, and a version of a Wellington Phoenix jersey with Mackenzie Barry's autograph. That's wonderful. Now, Emma, you can go next.
So mine is Queens, Kings, and Emperors of the Week. It's all of them all at once. And it's all of the people that are working behind the scenes on the Save Canberra United project. Obviously, wish they didn't have to do this, but really, really happy to see, you know, that there's such a large amount of people that are so passionate about keeping Canberra United where they belong, which is in our league. So huge shout out to them.
Yep. Totally agree. Dale, who have you chosen?
My choice for Queens of the Week is Japan for scoring so early against the US. No other reason, just silencing the ground. It made me really, really happy. My Joker of the Week is whoever decided to make the US, who were wearing white during that game, blue on the score bug, while Japan, who were wearing blue, were made red. I have a lot of questions. You can answer them in your good time.
That reminds me, I will have to lift that from my group chat because, it's an awful score bug. Yeah. Truly, truly awful. And I got three queens. So firstly, shout out to Hills United goalkeeper Sarah Easthope in the second tier of New South Wales Football, New South Wales League One Women's, and a stream game as well. She saved a penalty and kept a clean sheet in a top-of-the-table clash against Bankstown City. Now, Hill's the top of the table. Number two, Central Coast Mariners midfielder and New South Wales Futsal Premier League legend Bianca Galic has called up to the Croatian squads. The surname did cause a brief moment of panic with Madge until she realised it was Bianca Galic who was going to play in the Croatian squad, not Daniela Galic. We can all rest easy. Don't worry. And my third queen is Irish youth international Joy Ralph, scored the goal that took the Republic of Ireland to the European Under 19 Championship finals. Big achievement for a small country, especially because there's only eight countries that make that tournament. And I think the last time they made that, it turned out to be what we could call the Katie McCabe generation. So that's something to keep an eye on in a couple of years. Yeah, that's time to wrap up another long podcast, but I mean, less stressful than usual, I hope. But yep. Oh, all right. So on behalf of Magellacard, Emma Burke and Dale Roots, this is Eric Subihano signing off, wishing you all the usual, plenty of good vibes, great coffee, sick tattoos, razzlers, and may girls continue to have the opportunities to play community sport as they see fit. See you next time.